welcome to American Statesman Blog Talk Radio, the place where it's all about duty, honor, and country. Today's Thursday, March 20th, 2014. This is Sally Baptist. Thank you for tuning in to this week's edition of Smart Talk Elections 2014, Know Your Candidates with Sherry Smart and Neil Rice. I'm going to talk about a couple of real quick things here, and then we've got a very lively show going. First off, I have to say it every time, Florida voters, vote no on Amendment 1. Vote no on Amendment 1. And just know that whenever they put some type of an amendment like this on a midterm ballot, that's because they're playing games and they don't think the voter turnout's going to be enough, so they think they can swindle us or scam us on the thing. So make sure you vote no. The other is the Orlando-Orange County Expressway Authority. Senate Bill 230 is going to give the culture of corruption unbelievable control over the whole region. They want it to absorb various expressway authorities through Seminole County, Osceola County, and the whole Central Florida area. They want to be under this one umbrella of the Orlando-Orange County Expressway Authority that is being investigated today for corruption. It's always been corrupt. We do not need them. Contact Tallahassee. Contact your representatives and your senators. Tell them no to 230. Stop the corruption. And then the last thing, which is and the Expressway Authority stuff, I'll talk a little bit more in the second half. The other thing, which I'll talk a little bit more in the second half, too, if we have time, is factions. We have got to stop. I have been listening to Tallahassee on the Florida Channel, listening to the various committee hearings, listening to various things out of Washington, and we're constantly focusing on some group of individuals and not Americans. When are we going to be Americans? Stop saying it's the Latino group or it's the illegal group or it's the, I don't hear anybody saying the Italians out there, and I don't hear them saying the Russians, but they go out there with the women's group, this and that. They keep dividing us. We're Americans, and we should be addressing everything as Americans. And on that short rant on that one, I will leave it and hand this over to Sherry Smart and her guest. Hey, Sherry.
Hey, Sally. Thank you so much. Our guest this evening is Dr. Rich Swire. This man is amazing. He's got his fingers in everything. He's a wonderful writer. He has a e-magazine. I'm looking at his website right now, so people that are interested, and if you want to log on while you're listening, you can look at what he's written. He's prolific. It's www.drrichswire.com. I have it up right now in front of me looking at all the articles he's written. And if nothing else, you need to give it a look so you understand a little bit more about what's going on in Florida and Florida politics, because you're certainly not going to find it in your mainstream media. Welcome to the show, Dr. Rich Swire.
Well, I really appreciate it. I'm honored and humbled to be on the show and looking forward to a heated discussion about what's going on in education in Florida and then in other areas that may be of interest.
Absolutely. And the number one topic that's coming up, because we're going to have a vote pretty soon in Sarasota for more taxes, for more money to go to our schools. I know how I feel about this, but I'd like to hear your opinion on what you think of this new referendum.
Well, I want to begin the process of discussing this very important point,
right,
with this idea. I am for an educated public. What I am against is what public education has become. When I was going to school, and of course I date you all the young people out there, I'm going to be turning 69 this year. When I went to school, school was about learning. School was about understanding the basic principles so that when you left school, you had the necessary toolkit to be successful. Today, fast forwarding to 2014, we are seeing in our public schools, and Sarasota is no exception, Sarasota County public schools are no exception, they've turned into essentially factories. One of the things that I have a big problem with is somehow people believing that putting more money into schools, and specifically more money into teachers' salaries, makes a difference in student outcomes. Several years ago, I was at a presentation at the Sarasota County Community Foundation, and Lori White, the current superintendent, was there, and she was making a pitch to extend the 1 mil tax. And I raised my hand, and she very politely called on me, and I asked her a very simple question. I said, Lori, is there any research, is there any nexus between money and student outcomes, the amount of money spent on education and student outcomes? Her answer was no. So it's not about money. What it's really about, what really makes a difference, is the quality of teacher in the classroom. And to have a quality teacher, you have to give principals and administrators the power to hire good teachers and fire bad teachers.
Amen.
Yes. I mean, it's not, I'm not trying to denigrate in any way, shape, or form teaching. Teaching should be a profession. It is not a unionized idea. It has become driven by the unions, and so teachers no longer have that aura, like doctors and nurses, of being an independent group built on professional standards. It's basically all, you know, how much money can I get? Now, there are teachers out there that want to do the right thing. There are teachers out there that want to teach. But one of the big things that really bothers me is Sarasota County, as well as all the other 66 districts in the state of Florida, and the Florida Board of Education, and sadly Governor Rick Scott, have bought into Common Core. If there's anything that destroys the teacher's ability to teach and the student's ability to learn, it's Common Core. And that is a very disturbing situation. As a matter of fact, if you go to drrichswire.com, there's a wonderful column there by Dr. Mary Graber. And Dr. Graber points out something very interesting. She talks about the end game being the redistribution of grades. And I think we're seeing that already in our schools. We've seen that over the last decades. And Common Core just is the final nail in the coffin. What we have now in our schools are, our children are not being graded and promoted based on merit, academic achievement, but they're being graded and promoted based on other factors. We are also seeing our schools lowering standards. And even recently, the State Board of Education, when the legislature implemented higher standards in math and reading and writing, when the grades came out and we found that our students were not meeting the standard, and many districts and many schools within the districts fell much short on their quote-unquote school grade, we saw the Florida Board of Education freeze the grading system. That's a sad situation, because what we're doing is we're saying, well, look, you know, it doesn't matter. We don't really want higher standards. We want standards that we control, and we want lower standards so everyone can pass. And, of course, that's a bad, very bad situation. Also, what's interesting is we're starting to see administrators and teachers assigning points to students for behaviors and attitudes instead of academics. I mean, I know right now you can go to a school and you will see kids graded on how many projects they do outside the classroom, you know, how much they volunteer. You know, that's not an academic responsibility. Volunteerism, it comes from the heart. You know, if a student wants to volunteer, wonderful. If a student wants to play football, wonderful. If a student wants to spend their time in church, great. You know, but that's not what the school is designed to do. We shouldn't be rewarding students, or at least not in an academic sense. We certainly should encourage students, to be giving and to be kind and gentle, but we should not be giving academic grades based on that. And, of course, the last thing is we're starting to see grading by student, and we're seeing it being done by group.
Right.
So that destroys individuality. We're seeing, in some cases, no grades given at all. We have some schools in Sarasota County and across the state that are using that model of no grading. Don't give any grades because you might harm somebody's attitude. It's all about whether or not the student feels good about themselves, versus whether or not they're academically capable. Now, one of the things that I wanted to talk about, and I know you wanted to talk about, Sherry, was about the referendum, the extension of the 1 mil tax, which was supposed to have only been for one period to cause because they were facing, the school system was facing a loss of revenue, and they had to have something to help them get through that bad period. Well, now it's going on to what this is the fourth iteration of this. And it was, as was pointed out going in, that this is all about winning. It's all about getting the money, and it's not about student achievement. And I wanted to kind of point out to your listeners why I personally voted no on Amendment 1 in Sarasota County. There are some myths being put out by the school system. The first myth that is really kind of grabs people, because everyone asks, well, why are we voting on this in March? Why didn't we vote on it in November? And, of course, the school district says, well, in order to get it in the budget cycle, we need to do it in March. So they're talking about the next budget cycle. Well, if you did it in November, you still would get it in the next budget cycle.
Yeah.
It's a false notion.
Disingenuous. Yes.
Yeah. If they hold it in November, not pay the $500,000 extra to have the special election to the supervisor, it still would be within the budget cycle. Now, why don't they do it in November? Because the only time the school district held the referendum in November during a general election, it got voted down. Why did it get voted down? Because when you have a general election, you have more people going to the polls. When you have an off-cycle election, that by its very nature suppresses the vote.
Absolutely.
So it's very important for the district to suppress the vote in order for it to be successful.
Right.
Now, and you know that as well as I do, Sherry. I mean, it is a Ponzi scheme, if you will. It's a false notion.
Absolutely.
And again, yeah. And then again, the next point is that somehow without this money, students are going to be harmed. And of course, I mentioned that earlier, is that there is no nexus, there is no connection between the amount of money given to a school system and student performance. I mean, you can look at major school districts that have very high, matter of fact, the highest amount of money per student given in the nation is in the Washington, D.C. school system, and it's a total failure.
Absolutely.
And of course, Detroit is not far behind, and we now know that Detroit is in receivership. So it's not a matter of money. It's a matter of the quality of the person standing in the front of the classroom. If you hold that person accountable, if you hold the teacher accountable, then you will find that they will teach their students at a very high level. They will be demanding. They will require excellence. They will require you to do work to earn a good grade. and they will test you. All of those have historically been shown to be positive ways of learning. Now, at some point, you know, I mean, there's this false notion that if I just pay that teacher more money, that teacher will be a better teacher. That is not, if we in fact did not have a monopoly, if public education wasn't a monopoly, that may be true. But public education is a monopoly. It is a closed system. And so wage competition is not a factor. As a matter of fact, teachers' wages are not based on merit. They're not based on, I'm a better teacher, therefore I get paid more. They're based on longevity.
Right.
How long have you been sitting behind the desk?
Right.
How long have you had chalk on your fingers? That is not conducive to excellence.
You got that right. I've met many a teacher that I'm just stunned that they're in the profession they're in. I had a friend in Tennessee who was a second grade teacher, and she was teaching her students that we bombed Pearl Harbor. Now the next day when the students came in and said, you know, you were wrong, my mom and dad, and you know what she told her class? Oh, I didn't tell you that. Not only did you tell them the wrong thing, then you didn't even own up to it. That's called messing with somebody's little mind, you know?
That's the point.
Was grounds for dismissal. You don't need to be here. You should
no,
be out.
No, that's the truth. And I have, you know, I don't know if you've noted, but I actually was for a period of time a substitute teacher in the Sarasota County system. And what is really amazing is when you're a substitute, you get put in very various classes.
Absolutely.
And you get a broad range. And I worked at Venice High School. And I think one of the things that really disturbed me is that I was put in a class, and I understand it was a class for recalcitrants. In other words, the students in the class had been essentially kicked out of other classes.
Right.
And I was supposed to teach them how to make, these are high school kids. Most of them very savvy, street smart high school kids. You know, these were like juniors. And I was teaching them with little wooden nickels, dimes, and quarters how to make change.
Oh, no.
Now, and I'm sitting there going, are you serious? Are you serious? And I, you know, of course I didn't do that. Because, I mean, this is so, because you could see that they were just being bored to tears.
Absolutely.
And, you know, so one of the things that's very interesting, a good friend of mine, Dr. Larry Reed, who is the president of the Foundation for Economic Education, he has a set of seven principles that he goes to talk about good public policy. And I think some of those are applicable to this referendum and public school policy. One of the things he says his first principle is that people who are equal are not free, and equal people and free people are not equal. And I want to replace people with students. Students who are equal do not learn, and students who learn are not equal.
Correct.
Every child will move at the fastest pace that they can, because they learn a thirst for knowledge.
Correct.
So the more you can encourage a student to think independently and not use a one-size-fit-all curriculum or a one-size-fits-all philosophy, When you give them the opportunity to think for themselves, they will do much better in their lives, and they will be better husbands and wives. They will be better workers. They'll be better citizens, and they will certainly serve their personal interests as well as the interests of the nation. So it's really sad to see the dumbing down that we're seeing right now. And one of the things that disturbs me most is if this referendum passes again because of the odds of an off-cycle election or in the favor of the school board.
Right.
Although I'm seeing this really go crazy on the internet because it's tied to Common Core. Sarasota County School System and the school board have bought all in into Common Core. And if anything, if there's any reason not to throw money at schools, it's because of Common Core.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and when you see a school system grab onto and fully implement, actually the next school year they're going to be fully embedded in Common Core, you're going to see children not served well from an educational perspective. And it's not just me talking. That's experts, teachers, administrators, concerned parents, people who have studied this issue over and over again. The more my writers write about it, the more disappointing I find and more dangerous Common Core is for our future and for our children, and which is interesting.
I know a group of individuals in Port Charlotte that are reading the textbooks there, and what they're finding is horrendous. I mean, if I was a parent, I'd be snatching my kid out of public school right now. I really would.
My son actually homeschools.
Yeah, this is disgusting. And then I read an article today by Gary North, and it was so timely. And it's called Public School Maven Predicts Public School Free Cities in 10 Years. In other words, they're saying the whole system is going to collapse in 10 years. And then what's really interesting in this article, he said, these well-paid bureaucrats become cheerleaders for one reform after another, like Common Core. But their team, tax-funded education, has not had a winning season since 1940. And it's the truth.
Well, yeah. Look, several years ago, I did a series of columns before the last referendum came up for a vote, and a good friend of mine, David Merrill. David Merrill is was a former mayor of the city of Sarasota, and as a Harvard business grad, a very successful businessman, served his community as the mayor. And then, continued on with his life, his private life. And he had an itching to look at the school year, the 2010 school year FCAT scores. And he did a very interesting analysis and compared the scores that Sarasota County Schools children received on the FCAT in reading and mathematics and science at two other counties within the state of Florida. And he did this not knowing what he was going to come up with, and what he came up with really shocked him. And what he found was that essentially one of the things that Sarasota County says is that we're one of the top districts in terms of student performance on the standardized tests, we're rated, graded one of the top districts by the State Board of Education. Well, David really drilled down into the FCAT scores, and what he found was the reason Sarasota County does so well is because we have more white kids than black or Hispanic kids. Now, that sounds counterintuitive, but it's true. What happens is because we have such a high percentage of white children from white families, their scores tend to reduce or tap down the negative scores or the lower scores in the minority community. However, what David found next was even more startling. He said, when you compare our white kids in Sarasota County to white kids in other counties, our kids do less well than, say, Miami-Dade, which has a very high number of minority students and ESOL students. And he also found, which was even scarier, is everybody talks about Pineview and how Pineview is so wonderful. Well, he also looked at gifted students and compared Sarasota gifted students to gifted students in other counties. And he found very shockingly that our gifted students do less well than gifted students in other counties. So what you have is this situation where Sarasota County's ranking is not based on academic merit. It's based on demographics.
Right.
And that's something that the school district doesn't want to talk about. You know, they will say, oh, look, we've got this money and look at how wonderful we're doing.
Yeah.
But in reality, it's the demographics that are driving their success.
Exactly.
And even so, they're not serving the white children as well as other school districts in terms of academic achievement, nor, which is even scarier, the minority students. And that is a disturbing fact that many voters don't understand. Now, you know, I mean, again, I want to go back to the basics. The basic rationale behind a good school is the smallness of the school. Right now we're building mega buildings. I mean, if you go down anywhere in Sarasota County, they're building these massive high schools. And essentially they're factories.
Absolutely.
They're factories. I mean, it's not a school. The neighborhood school has gone away that was so successful when I was going to school. I mean, I walked to school. I walked to school for grade school, I walked to school for middle school, and I walked to school for high school. And in many cases, the same school was a elementary, middle, and high school, much like Pineview. Pineview is a great model. You know, the student starts in the second grade and goes all the way through the 12th grade. And there's a consistency there. One of the things that I found was very disturbing was that through my research was that because we have elementary schools, middle schools, and high schools never on the same campus like Pineview, if a school, for example, a middle school, hands off a student that is below academic standards to the high school, there's no recourse. If you're in the same building and you're eating lunch all the teachers are eating lunch, and one teacher will say the seventh grade teacher will say to the eighth grade teacher or the eighth grade teacher or say to the seventh grade, hey, the kids you're sending me, you know, aren't making it. They ain't cutting it. They can't read. And they can't write and they can't cipher. And there's a certain peer pressure to get it right. So, you know, and then also I found through my research that about half of the students that graduate from high school in Sarasota County have to be given remedial courses in either math or writing or reading when they go to the community college. In Sarasota County. It's called now the State College of Florida. It used to be called Community College, but now it's the State College of Florida, which makes it sound woofy-woofy. But many of those students that are coming out of our schools are not prepared even to go to community college, let alone to be successful in a career, whatever that career may be. It doesn't matter. I mean, if I don't care if a person leaves high school and becomes a street sweeper, as long as they're the best street sweeper in the world, then we are all benefit from that. So,
I personally would like to see an educational system that's not focused so much on someone getting a J-O-B, a job. I'd like to see more of the entrepreneurial spirit and our inventors, our creators. I'd like to see people like that coming out. My son graduated from Purdue. When I went to his graduation ceremony, I'd say 60% were foreign that were graduating from Purdue. You know, it's like, wow, we're really providing a great higher education for foreigners.
But no, that's true.
What's happening with our own kids? Oh, that's right. They don't make the grades to get into Purdue.
Well,
now,
that's the key.
Now, what's up with that, people? You know, that should have parents outraged.
No, I agree. And one of the things, and I agree with you, this is not about jobs.
Right.
I don't want anyone to understand, I don't want any of your listeners to think this is about world of work. The purpose of education, there's a value system there. The education is a value-based system. It's to teach students basic values, values of responsibility, values of working in a sense to self improve. So you instill these values as well as knowledge, and the knowledge allows the student at some point, whatever that point is, to decide what their life path is going to be. I mean, some of it is by, obviously some people, some children say at the age of six, I'm going to be a dentist, and they end up being a dentist. Well, okay. If that's the case, great.
That
but that's not the
clueless.
Object. That's not the object. Yeah.
Yeah, clueless. I have no clue. What would I be good at? What am I interested in? That's it's unusual when you see a little tyke that's like that, 5 years old, knowing they want to be a veterinarian or a researcher. It's like, okay, you were born with a certain gift, and that's amazing. But what about the other 98% that are clueless?
Well, exactly, and I don't know that clueless is bad. I mean, I'm not sure that it's the idea. The idea is people who find something they want to do and are passionate about it, once they find it, and they may hit or miss, and of course life circumstances may put them in a position or may take them out of a position. But the idea is to be able to have the skill sets to pivot, that if something good happens, you can take advantage of it. If something bad happens to you, then you are able to get yourself out of it. And the ability to make good life choices is a very important part of that.
Oh, absolutely.
And if you don't make good life choices, and I find that what's interesting is when I talk with my grandchildren now, and they are homeschooled. And by the way, they decided they were going to be homeschooled. They went to their mom and dad, my son and his beautiful wife, and they did a PowerPoint presentation.
Okay, I like
this. Explaining why it was advantageous to them, Emma and Ethan, to be homeschooled. And they pointed out people in history who had homeschooled. And they talked about George Washington. They talked about Abraham Lincoln. They talked about Bill Gates, who did not finish college.
Right.
And because it's about being able to conduct yourself as a good human, and to contribute to your family, to your neighborhood, to your community, to your state, and to your nation. That's really what it's all about. And the more you are free to do that, the more you are free to learn, the freer you will be. The more you are put into a factory, one size fits all, it's 8:12, so therefore we're going to cover subject A. At 8:30, we're going to cover subject B, and at 8:45, we're going to cover subject C, and then you leave the classroom in your wonderful little Orwellian uniforms, and it's a one-size-fits-all education. That's why when I started this discussion, I am very much in favor of an educated, of every person, an educated public. I am not, and I have learned, even though I have a doctorate in education, that public education clearly is not the answer. And you know, it is already collapsing.
Right.
It's going to collapse in the sense, perhaps fiscally, sooner mm-hmm. rather than later. But
right.
this is not the way you do it. And the more freedom you give to teachers, the more you empower teachers, and the more empower. I'll use the example of my wife. My wife is a nurse. She spent 35 years of her life in the nursing profession. At Sarasota Memorial Hospital, my wife is not only evaluated by her superior, she's also receives evaluations from her peers, her fellow nurses. And there's a third aspect of it. When she goes out and she interacts with patients,
right,
she is graded by patients. So the client grades her. Now, the person who is the beneficiary of her services grades her. So she gets three different evaluations. She gets one, and those are together decide whether or not she gets promoted, paid a higher salary, gets a bonus or whatever. I think that's a model that's very powerful. Doctors are not unlike that. I mean, if you're a good doctor, everybody knows that. If you're a bad doctor, you can hide it for a certain amount of time, but eventually you'll be found out. And the more you are, and that's why I'm a believer in actually parents and students having input into teachers' performance reports. Because, I mean, what better way for my grandchildren, by the way, both of them went to Pineview, did not like it. Both of them went to a charter school, did not like it, and that's when they did the PowerPoint presentation.
I'm not
going anywhere. I would ask them. We would pick them up from school, and I'd say, well, what did you learn today? And they would say, nothing. You know, and when you hear that over and over again, I say, well, you must have learned something. Now they're just totally excited. They're very excited. They're learning. There is structure. There is supervision, but it's a loving supervision from concerned parents.
Right, it's totally different.
And they are studying with other students, by the way, and my son brings in other experts, people who might be an expert in art or someone who might be an expert in music.
Amazing network. Homeschoolers have incredible resources.
Absolutely, and that's
they really do. They have an amazing group of people out there.
And that's what America's built on. America was built on that model. Homeschooling.
The benefit of being a homeschooler is almost harkening back to the day when we were all in that one little room. So you had 6-year-olds and 17-year-olds all in the same room. So the 6-year-old is listening to the 17-year-old's class core curriculum, right? So you're sitting there and you're listening to it. So then the next year, the 6-year-old is now 7, he's still listening to that information. If he had missed something when he was 6, he's still listening to the 6-year-old curriculum. So you're always getting – so if you have a gap, you're not going to be embarrassed by the gap. It's going to be covered. And you have that safety net. Today, the way they structure things is, okay, you're in the first grade, you're going to learn this. Boom. Then you're going to go to the second grade, and you're just going to learn this. So you don't get that recap of something that you may have missed. And it might be something really, really small, but it's that little building block that if you don't get it, then nothing else makes sense. And these poor kids don't have that opportunity.
No, and too many times, if there's a point, and one of the things that I sat on a number of different study groups and so on, and whenever a child gets to a point where they can't read, and that happens much, usually in middle school in Sarasota County, you'll find that once a child looks at the chalkboard or looks at a book and suddenly realizes that they don't understand what's there,
right?
they begin to become problematic. They also they drop out. So, you know, we talk about high school dropouts, but most of the dropouts, or many of the dropouts, I won't say most, many of the dropouts occur between middle school and high school. The kids just never come back.
That's never shown
in the statistics. It's never shown in the statistics. And, of course, now, you know, they basically will give a high school diploma on a whim. I mean, there's no standardization. I mean, there's no one high school diploma. There are multiples.
Right.
So you can get around, you can literally get around and reduce your dropout rate because, look, administrators know how to play the system. You know, and a good administrator will not play the system and let the chips fall as they may. But typically what we find is we find administrators who game the system. And I've actually had a person in Miami-Dade who works full-time say that there are kids who are shifted into private schools that are basically storefronts that are just set up there to bring the kid in just to give them a diploma, just to get the kid off the roll of a high school so that they don't have to count them as a dropout. And this is a sad situation. It's something that needs to be...
Well, this is bad. To me, it's criminal. You know,
well,
you have all this potential, and you're just literally flushing it down the drain. Now, it's very timely.
Is.
I don't know if you know this individual, Kathy James. But she sent me an email today, and she asked if we would talk about this. So I'm gonna let you know what this is. She wrote, she was reading the Herald Tribune, and she said basically they were skewing, you know, this new surtax that's going to be on the referendum. And she said it basically was staged questions. So she was asking the Herald Tribune two things, accountability of referendum funds. So her question is this. In order to support another surtax renewal, many in the community feel that these funds should be openly accountable to the Sarasota County taxpayers. In specific detail as to where and how this additional money is spent, many feel that these funds should be a line item in the school district's annual budget. Since these public funds have never clearly and concisely been accounted for in the past, do you plan to make such information publicly accounted for starting now? And if so, how do you plan to do this? What would you say to that?
Well, I mean, I think Kathy's got a good point. I think the school district has never, it just goes into a pile of money. Okay, there's no visibility of what that money is actually used for.
Right.
Now, I can tell you where the vast majority of it goes. It goes into teacher salaries. Okay.
And that's basically what this push is for, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole point is it gives the district the ability to keep up with, although not very well, the growing problem of unfunded liability for teachers' pensions. And so by adding this money into the pot, what it basically does is take an antiquated, ill-advised, wrong-for-education system of seniority and gives them the ability to do step increases. One of the things that whenever I talk to a former teacher, a person who went in to the teaching, you know, into public school, like public school, thinking, oh, I'm going to make a difference in children's lives, and then they suddenly get disappointed because when they try and put in the extra effort and they're the teachers who had been there have been there and have, you know, gotten tenure and have been there for many years. They say, don't do that. If you spend the extra time with these kids, you're going to make us look bad. Don't do
that. That's right.
And so I think visibility of public dollars, government transparency is critical, but not just of that should have been done before the referendum was put on the ballot. There should have been a full accounting of exactly where all the money went.
Right.
Who got it? What was it spent on?
Yeah.
And by year, and I think taxpayers would be shocked
Exactly.
So understand,
now,
it's not going to programs. It's not going
right,
to programs.
Right, and Kathy James's second question was, in the past, the marketing campaign for the referendum tax continuation has specifically stated that the additional tax dollars would go directly toward education and student programs. However, in 2010, within less than 90 days after the passage of the referendum by the voters of Sarasota County, the tennis program for the district was canceled. Systematically speaking, paying teachers' salaries could be considered as going directly toward education, which casts doubt upon the actual use of the referendum funds. Assuming that most in the community would support art, music, and physical education and the continuation of these programs, what percentage of each additional referendum dollar will go for non-salaried student program needs?
No, I think that's appropriate. I think, you know, if you're going to say that this, if you're going to use the idea that not passing the negative side, which is what the district uses all the time, and you will hear, I've even had, you know, principals contact me, why are you against this? I mean, I'm going to lose $1 million. No, you're not. There's not going to be $1 million lost. You know, you're not going to have to cut anything because there's money available. And we don't know where the money has gone. We just don't know. Yet, that doesn't matter, of course, to teachers and administrators who vote for it, and, of course, school personnel, because it goes straight in. They know where the money goes. It goes into their step increases. Everything from, you know, bus drivers to kitchen help to teachers, primarily teachers, and, of course, administration. That's where the money goes. So, you know, to say that it's going into a program, show me the program. You know, it's, I guess I come from the Missouri, the show me state. Show me where you put the money.
That's right. That's what we all should have. Yeah. And if not, let's do a forensic audit.
Yeah. I mean, it is if there was a nexus between more money and students being able to learn more, I would be all for this. There is none. That's the fundamental bottom line. The money.
Now, did you want to talk a little bit about Common Core and the expensive part of Common Core?
Well, yeah, it's going to cost the state about $1 billion,
right?
To implement fully. It really removes control of public education from the local level. It certainly disenfranchises the parent. It certainly disenfranchises the student. It definitely locks the teacher into a box. And administrators and school boards have no say. I mean, they do what they're told to do. And it comes down from on high. Again, I go back to I commend anyone to go on to drrichwire.com and just type in the search block Common Core. You will find dozens and dozens of articles that lay it very clearly out. You know, it is a system that has been co-opted by it's being funded primarily by the federal government. It's being promoted by those who will benefit from it the most, and that's primarily some notable foundations, including Jeb Bush's foundation, educational foundation, because they will control the testing portion of it. In other words, they will be controlling the testing part of it. And what we saw recently, earlier this year, was that the SAT has fully aligned with Common Core, which means that the SAT test is now going to be no longer and what's interesting about the SAT, you have to be very careful, because if you look at the history of the SAT, it was actually created in the 1920s and 30s to identify the feeble-minded. It was part of the eugenics, American eugenics movement.
Wow.
And yes, and It was designed to identify the feeble-minded with the end result that they would be, if you will, separated, herded out of the main, you know, taken out of the main herd.
Interesting.
You know, it began as the Simon-Binet test, and it was designed for just that, to categorize, if you will, to show this person is not worthy of further interest by society. And so it's a very dangerous situation. The SAT has a very, cloudy past background. How it got started is very, very cloudy. It's designed to eliminate, not to accelerate, you know, our society. There's nothing that says you have to pass the SAT to get into college. As a matter of fact, most colleges today basically don't even look at it very much. They look at other issues with students, none of those foreign students that I know of, you know, took the SAT, but they certainly are here going to our elite colleges and universities, you know, and they've had a benefit of a non, although in some nation states they certainly are centralized, but you know, education is best handled at the local level. It's best done with control being in the hands of parents and teachers and students, and that's the key. If you can empower parents, teachers, and students, then you will have students. You will have a system that is teaching rather than propagating or propagandizing. So the more decisions on what to teach, how to teach, when to teach it, and the specific language of what is taught is done at a higher level, again, the less children will learn, and they're just being indoctrinated. And that's a very sad situation here in the United States of America when we have such great resources. I mean, you know, look, think about it. You know, the young people are only about 20% of our population, but they're 100% of our future. If we don't use that, if we don't nurture that, then we as a nation are lost, and that's a very sad situation.
Yeah,
but no, I think
yeah,
we've had
that in day-to-day, just dealing with teenagers in today's world. It's amazing.
Yeah,
to me.
I think they can't
carry on a conversation. They can't look you in the eye when you're talking to them. They're so disconnected. And I blame some of it on technology, but the other part I do blame on schools as well.
Oh, absolutely. I think that there is no doubt that the public education system has been on a downward spiral for decades. What's happened, I think the fundamental issue is schools were bastions for learning, you know, at every level. The sole purpose of the school was to learn, to help children learn and understand and to develop into mature adults with a purpose in life. Right now, schools are basically institutions for social engineering. I don't know if I can put it any simpler than that. It's the curriculum is designed to produce a product. And that product is not a person who can think, who has character, who has the ability to maneuver through the challenges that young man or woman are going to face. And I think that's the sad part of it all.
Yeah, and you know, and on that note, because we've talked about Common Core on the show quite a few times, trying to educate people. And one of my favorite things to read is "I Do Not Choose to Be a Common Man." It's by My Creed by Dean Alfringe. And it's, if you read it, it talks about what truly means to be an American. Being American is not being common. And when you try to explain to people, and I mean, this is my take on Common Core, and I mean, listening to the Bill Gates and the John Ellis Bush and all the other nonsense, these people are so disgusting to me. But I truly believe Common Core is communism. Go back to the most basic definition of communism. Go back to how they control what you learn. They're training you, not teaching you to think and not teaching you what's going on. School should be a process to teach you how to think, how to, that's why you're supposed to have a gigantic library of books to go and get information. They keep doing just the opposite. They cut down the library. They are, it's true, like you said, the indoctrination. But I think my own case is I keep putting that word common, communism, common property, common community, this whole mentality where they are trying to convert us over into this other society, and they have to do it with the kids. That's truly where the transition, the ultimate transition takes place, with that generation that you convert at that educational level, at the educational level, and it really is communism to me.
No, it is. It's a anytime you centralize the power in the hands of a few people, you know, very bad things happen. And whenever you disperse power and give it to the individual and empower the individual, you empower the student, you empower the parent, you empower the teacher, now you will find good things will happen. And I think that that's a fundamental public principle. I mean, that works in economics, it works in life, it works throughout, you know, everything we do on a day-to-day basis. And what we're finding now is Common Core is not looking, that's not considering the long-term effects on all the people. It's just worried about a few people making money and making big money. And again, we never, the idea, equal outcomes, the whole idea of Common Core is equal outcomes. And everybody is equal. And again, I will argue with anyone that free people are not equal, and equal people are not free. That's just equal. That's the point. I mean, that's the whole genesis of this. Under communism, everyone is equal, and they are not free. And if you go, the further you get away from communism, the more people are free, but they're not equal. And you just have to accept that. You can't make everyone have the same salary, the same grade point average, take the same courses, get the same letter grade, go to the same class in the same room all the time and expect creativity. You can't. It's impossible. Now, obviously, the elites will not send their kids to that kind of a situation. And people who are smart enough, even though they may not be rich, they will homeschool, and or they will go to, you know, we have a wonderful thing in Sarasota called the Classical Academy, which is run by two wonderful teachers, and I think that's a step in the right direction. When you go to a classical education, you know, you read, you understand, you debate, you argue. You come to, you know, your own decision about conflicting ideas and ideals, and I think that's what education is all about. And again, education has a moral basis to it, and I think that's a very important point. And no, it is. Look, this is all designed to be. The more compliant the people are, the more compliant the children are, the more they don't question. You know, when I was growing up, you know, there was that old saying, I don't forget what it was, that, you know, question anybody over 30. Well, unfortunately, I'd love to see that. I don't think our kids question anything anymore.
No, they don't.
I see a lot of young men and women who have no purpose in life. They are literally lacking the inner fire to strive
well,
and.
Well, you can't really blame them though. when you look at our economy and you see how dead it's been for the past 5 years, it's kind of like, well, what do I have to look forward to? What is
well,
that?
But yeah, and I understand that, and I agree with you. And there's a group of young people in Detroit that are trying to bring, you know, entrepreneurship back to the city of Detroit, which was destroyed.
Boy, do they need it.
Oh, desperately. You know, a couple of people came up with this idea that they would have a lunch, and instead of people would come to the lunch, it was in a, you know, warehouse or wherever, and they'd get 50 or so people in a room, and everybody would brown bag. They would bring their own lunch. And then they would throw $10 or $15 or $5 or $20 into a brown bag. And then three different young people would stand up or, you know, about a project they have in the city of Detroit to do something. And at the end of the lunch, they would vote on who won, who had the best idea. And then they would hand them the brown paper bag.
Oh,
no, it may
awesome.
Have it may have $300, $400, $500, you know, depending on the generosity of the individuals that came to
seed money for their idea.
Yes, and they got instant feedback.
That's right.
And a little money to get their one of them had an idea of using recycled materials from some of these old factories to build park benches. And I think that one won one of the luncheon get-togethers, and they got $300, and they built five benches for that $300. I mean, you can't beat that. You can't beat
that's
that.
Right.
I mean, you know, I mean, why
well,
would you?
That gives me some hope right there. That's a little glimmer of hope on the horizon.
There's hope out there. There's always, even in the most oppressive, tyrannical government, there is liberty. There is liberty in the hearts of people. And,
oh, absolutely.
And we see it around the world in the most oppressive societies. We've seen character. We see people. I mean, I was reading some of the passages from Anne Frank. You know, the wonderful young girl who was writing so eloquently about what was happening around her up until the day she was taken away. I mean. You see yourself, oh, my goodness, I mean, how would a young person today, how would my grandchildren react to that? You know,
yeah.
How would they react to that kind of evil?
Right.
You know, how would they, and she was still hopeful. She wrote, people are good. I know people are good.
Right.
And she's right. She is right.
Yeah, she was right.
You know, yeah.
Okay, just let me
I've got a little homework assignment for your friend, the gentleman that you said that was the former mayor.
Yeah, David Merrill, yeah.
Okay, so here's a homework assignment for him. It would be interesting to see. Remember, the United States Department of Education was established in 1979. It
mm-hmm.
would be interesting to see if there was an increase in academic standards or a decrease since that time, from 1979 to today?
Yeah, I mean,
I never understood why we did that, our government ever did that. I remember, up until 1979, every state was doing their own thing.
Well, no, and I think that's an important issue. I think what you find is there are fundamental things that need to be learned. That has not changed over time. If you don't learn, you know, 1 + 1 = 2,
mm-hmm.
and 1 × 2, you know, equals 2, and so on, you'll never learn how to cipher. If you can't read a sentence, you can't read, you know, if you can't read and understand a sentence, you're going to fail. It's now, in the sense that you're not going to be able to do all those things you need to do. Now, I mean, there are exceptions to that. There's always an exception. And I think the purpose of public education over time has been to try and flatten the bell curve.
Right.
In other words, to make all those graduating equal outcomes. and when you try to physically flatten the bell curve, you're literally working against nature.
Absolutely.
And nature's laws. You cannot make everyone equal, because to do so, you have to take away something from one, and not necessarily in education, give it to another. I mean, it's not like redistributing wealth, but it is, you can redistribute grades. You can literally, you know, make someone who's smarter, who does well academically, appear to be dumb. By grading someone who is popular because of their, and it's interesting, in Dr. Graber's office, she was talking about, I mean, they're going to actually, the teachers under Common Core are going to be looking at issues such as zest.
I know!
Grit, okay, optimism, gratitude. How do you measure curiosity? You know, I mean,
right.
how do you measure zest? I mean, you know, I have no idea. And you know, I mean, of course, the opportunity to take something like that and use it for nefarious social engineering reasons is too tempting to even think about.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
No, it is. I mean, it is what it is. It's a non-cognitive skills evaluation, which literally violates the personal boundaries between teachers and students. I mean, what is it? Is it the teacher's role to? And actually, they're going to be using biometric computer measurements in the classroom is being encouraged. I mean, this is
that
Orwellian. This
parents.
Is Orwellian. This is really that, Orwellian.
That should terrify parents. They should be absolutely terrified about
yeah.
that. And there's one area you were talking about, warehousing kids. I went to a high school not long ago with a parent. She's English is her second language, and she asked me to go with her to the guidance counselor because she was afraid her English would not be, you know, understood. So I said, no problem, I'll go with you. Well, just getting through that school, I felt like I was on lockdown. I felt like I was a criminal. And I'm sitting
yeah.
there thinking, my gosh in heaven, these kids go through this every day.
Yes.
And so it's almost like you're preparing them to be, you know, all right, you're in this prison system. You're on lockdown.
Well, no, I mean, a prison is not, you know, is a useful word when you're talking about schools. I mean, there are some schools in some, like LA, Los Angeles Unified School District, where it's almost like a prison. I mean, they have bars on the windows. They have scanners going in and out. I mean, they have, you know, and once you're in the classroom, it is not a safe haven. Just because you think you're in the classroom doesn't mean you're in a safe haven. It's a very dangerous situation in the LA Unified School District, in Detroit and other places. I mean, you know, and then once you get in the classroom, you know, it's like prison. You know, you go through and you get the same food. You know, you're taught the same thing. You have the same gym period. I mean, that's not what schooling is all about. That's not what education is about. That is what public schools are about. But that certainly is not education. And that's the scary part. I mean, the social engineering going on in our schools today is mind-boggling. You know, to push certain belief systems, to push certain ideologies, to make children believe. I mean, I actually had that happen with my grandchildren. My granddaughter you know, was concerned about, processed food. And I said to her, have you considered what would happen if we didn't have processed food, if we weren't able to preserve food, put it in cans? What would happen?
Right.
People would starve to death. And she never thought of it that way. And she was ingrained when she was going to public school that this, you know, that any process, anything that's not natural, that's not naturally goes from the farmer to the table, is somehow evil. And I tried to explain to her that there are no unnatural ingredients in anything. I mean, you can eat too much of anything. I'm a big fan of pretzels that are filled with peanut butter. Now, I am a bad boy, but I tell you what, I love those. And as a matter of fact, I have on my website a wonderful movie. There's a wonderful movie. I have a video section on my the latest videos, and there's this has been going around the internet for over maybe 2 years. It's gotten millions and millions of reads, but it's called I Can't Believe We Made It. I don't know if you've seen it.
No,
but,
I haven't.
Okay, it's actually was an article written by someone that was read and has made its way around in various YouTubes, you know, with photos. And but it says, according to today's regulations and bureaucrats, those of us who were kids in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, or even the early 80s, probably should not have survived. Our baby cribs were covered with bright-covered lead-based paint. We had no child-proof lids or locks on medicine bottles, doors, or cabinets. And when we rode our bikes, we had no helmets. We drank water from the garden hose and not from a bottle. Yeah, if you think about it, we have, the bureaucrats have demonized so many things, like drinking water out of a garden hose.
Well, they turned us all into such wuss kitties,
Yes. I
noticed when my son was in kindergarten that I was highly offended as a mom because I saw them doing this to our little male children. They were turning them into little wuss kitties, and they were edifying and elevating the females and denigrating the males. And as a mother, we know how we are. And I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking to myself, this is not right. When did this happen?
Well, no. I think there is and that's part of the socioengineering. There is no male and female
anymore. I find that highly offensive.
There's no man and woman. That's an oxymoron. That's not real. That's what they're teaching our children. It's you can be whatever sex you want to be. And that you don't have to be what you think you are. Or what you are by nature, You have to go against nature.
That's another big problem I had in public.
That's another problem, that's a big problem. This anti-bullying campaign, the anti-bullying campaign in our public school systems, and particularly in Sarasota County, are not designed to teach anything other than that it's okay for mommies and mommies and daddies and boys and men and all those kinds of things. And, of course, our Department of Health and Human Services has redefined children as sexual beings, which means whatever goes, whatever goes.
No, they're sexualizing our children. And I, for one, that's another thing. I look at parents and I think, are you going to tolerate this? They're sexualizing our children at such a tender age. It's like, are you kidding me? Why? Why are parents putting up with this? I don't understand. I don't know.
Well, there are parents who are not. And again, but they're frustrated by when you have a monopoly in public education, what you're told is to shut up and sit down.
Right.
You will face tremendous intolerance by speaking up.
Right.
And I've seen that. I have parents all the time call me and tell me horror stories about their children in public schools. And then I say, great, I'll write a column about it. And they say, well, that's wonderful, but don't use my name
because my child
will be punished.
That's right.
My child will be punished. And that's true.
It's true.
They fear speaking out. They fear speaking out as a parent because the school system will punish their children.
Absolutely.
And that's a sad situation. I mean, that's not only Orwellian, that borders on communism, fascism, national socialism, whatever you want to call it.
That's been going
Marxism,
on.
Stalinism, statism, there's so
right.
many isms, but they all fit the public school system. And what bothers me is our elected school board members who are supposed to be independent of and free thinkers and represent the people and the parents and the students are not. And Sarasota County is famous for that. Sarasota County is famous for ignoring, telling parents to shut up and sit down and denigrating them.
Well, you brought up a good point about the school board members. I did a one-on-one interview with all the Charlotte County school board members, and it was talking about the one-on-one was regarding Common Core. It was amazing what they did not know. But
the thing
that really further stumped me was the fact that they said they had absolutely no authority. So I'm sitting there, and I said, okay, so I'm a parent. I come into my kid's, you know, fifth grade class. I have a problem with the curriculum. I talk to the teacher. The teacher says, oh, you need to go to the principal. So this parent takes a second day off from work or whatever to go talk to the principal. Principal says, I can't do anything. You need to go talk to the board, school board. Parent takes a third day off to make an appointment with the school board. They tell them, oh, there's nothing I can do. You need to talk to the legislators. So the parent has to take another day off, drive up to Tallahassee to make an appointment with the legislator. And the legislator says, oh, gee, go back to your school board. What's up with this game?
That's the perfect opt-out. You see,
what's
interesting, I went through in Sarasota County with a wonderful young lady, Aya Sewell, in 2010, her sons were going to middle and high school, and they came home with a book called World History, Patterns of Interaction. And she was sitting there, and her son was reading the book, and she picked it up and started to read it, and she said, "Holy cow, this is not right. This is inaccurate. This is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
There are factual errors within the book.
Right.
Okay. Yes. And then so she went to." To protest it, and she went to the district, and the district sent her back to the principal. Well, eventually I got involved, and it ended up going before the school board, and the school board said, well, there's nothing we can do about it because it's on the approved list of the state's approved textbook list. So they said, we can't action it, we're not going to action it, we're going to keep the book. You need to go to the Department of Education. So she did. She wrote a letter to the Commissioner of Education, and the Commissioner of Education's response was, "It's the school board can pick what textbooks to use or not from our approved list." So they kicked her right back to the school board, and it's a catch-22.
It is
a perfect catch-22. You can't win for losing. I mean, it's just one of those things. So I think the public school system has figured out how to shut up parents.
Oh yeah.
You put them through the administrative meat grinder.
Right.
You keep putting roadblocks, and then eventually you just turn them around and send them back from where they came. And eventually they give up.
That's exactly right.
Okay. Eventually they give up, and that's the point. They can outlast you. They get paid to do this. Parents don't get paid to do this.
Okay, we have upcoming elections here, and so what would be your recommendation?
There are three school board members in Sarasota County.
Right.
They need to be questioned on where is the money going.
Right.
For this amendment. They need to be questioned on their knowledge base of Common Core, and if they start regurgitating what Jeb Bush and Bill Gates and Arne Duncan are regurgitating, then they've already become part of the system.
Part of the problem.
They are the problem. They are the system. I mean, they're no longer independent elected officials representing the parents and the students. They don't represent the district. Okay, they're responsible. They have a fiduciary responsibility to the state. But they don't represent the teachers. They don't represent the administrators. Those are workers that come under them. And they're responsible directly to the parents and the students. Now, that's the problem, is when they lose sight of that fact, or they become indoctrinated and told. Because, I mean, look, they don't want responsibility. If they were held accountable, then they probably wouldn't get reelected. So now they can point and say, well, it's not my problem. Go talk to the people in Tallahassee. And next thing, the people in Tallahassee are going to say, well, go talk to the people at I Achieve, or go talk to the Gates Foundation, or go talk to the Jeb Bush Foundation, or go talk to Washington, D.C., the Department of Education. I mean, you know, it's a catch-22. It's passing you off to another level of bureaucracy and bureaucrat who is interested in only one thing, keeping their job. And the only way they keep their job is by turning you away and not facing the reality of what's going on.
So basically, my question is, why would we even have school board members if you're just sitting
there's no need for them. You might as well, we might as well disband all the 67 school boards.
Right.
We really don't need any administrative headquarters. We probably don't need principals. You know, just have the kids show up in the big factory, go to the assigned room, and be fed whatever comes out of the central planning committee. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, that's it. There's no need for any other, you know, it's just watch the big screen. It's like watching a TV and being mesmerized in 1984. You just watch the big screen, you know.
Right.
And you're going to be socially engineered into thinking groupthink. It's all groupthink. There's no independent thinking that goes on, and certainly not if think of a student that would come in to a classroom at Pineview. Let's say it's a student at Pineview, which prides itself on its openness and its ability to free think and all that, and they wrote a paper, an extensive, well-researched paper on the negative effects of homosexual lifestyle. You think they would get an A+ for that?
No, they'd be burned.
They would be thrown out of the classroom.
Oh yeah.
Bigoted, homophobic, you know, put upon by the teachers, the students, maybe even suspended. Or wear a T-shirt, you know, that says, we've seen that happen. We've seen zero tolerance, which is actually, zero tolerance is intolerance. Whenever you have a zero tolerance policy, it's intolerant. And it's usually intolerant of bad behavior, not good behavior. I mean, it's intolerant of good behavior. It condones bad behavior, but it's intolerant of good behavior. I mean,
intolerant of the very young minds that you want to exercise their rights, like the people that were not allowed to wear shirts with the American flag on it, the kids could show up with Mexican flags.
Yeah. I mean, the principal was fired because he was told the students to speak English. Why would you do that? What kind of message does that send throughout the system? Look, I have a man who, in the Miami, I'll tell this story real quick, because this just shows you how how it's not enough to make what is good look evil. You have to make what's evil look good. I have a writer. One of my writers is in the Miami-Dade schools, and he was sitting in his library, and a teacher and a student came in and said, "There's massive cheating going on in the industrial arts program in Miami Norland High School." in the Miami Norland Industrial Arts the teacher, literally two teachers were handing the students the answers to this to the questions. Why? Because the industrial arts program would get the high school an A grade.
Okay? Oh.
Yes. And the librarian said, well, gee, that's not right. So he reported it to the Miami-Dade Inspector General. Miami-Dade Inspector General came out, investigated, and found, yes, massive cheating was going on in the industrial arts program. And the kids were being given, literally given the answers and to take the test. And and now the teacher, the librarian, who was the whistleblower, guess what happened to him?
What?
He got unceremoniously booted out of the high school.
Huh?
Unceremoniously
wow.
booted out of the high school. He was made a pariah because he blew the whistle. The two teachers involved, one of them is already back at the high school teaching. The same high school where the cheating, where she was cheating. She spent, I think, 60 days, 90 days on suspension and is back at the same high school when the whistleblower has been removed unceremoniously from his position. The gentleman who oversaw, the assistant principal who oversaw the industrial arts program while the cheating was occurring, was promoted to the principal of that school. I mean,
so we really do reward evil.
We reward, yes. Mm-hmm. When you know, and again, I go back. You know, you can't. It's hard to understand for anyone to understand that how this makes it, how this really harms our schools and harms. You know, harms when students see this, that cheating is allowed,
right.
is rewarded,
right.
then what's the lesson?
Absolutely.
When you call out and you point out, and you know, that someone in education is cheating. I mean, there's nothing worse in other than, you know, sexually abusing a child or beating up
right.
a child. But there's nothing in the sense of professionally worse than cheating. And cheating for what? And by the way, guess what? The even though the cheating occurred, the school retained its school grade, and each of the teachers in the school got a $1,600 bonus.
So everybody got paid off.
On average, they each got about $1,600, and it was state and federal grant money for, you know, excelling in academics.
Yeah, excelling at cheating and lying.
Yeah, cheating.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, that's fine. Yep.
It is not fun. It's what's really sad is you sit here and you go, how can this possibly happen in America? You know, how can, you know, if a child is caught cheating, you know, they're supposed to be unceremoniously drummed out of the, you know, school or punished in some way. But today, I'm not sure that's happening. And what's interesting is that the IG found it in one school. Well, if it's happening in one school, it's got to be happening in other schools. And so the question was why weren't other schools looked at? Why weren't other industrial arts programs, you know, sampled?
Right.
And the answer was they weren't, because they don't want anybody to know about it. And, oh, by the way, the superintendent received one of the Superintendent's Association of the State of Florida gave him an award for his wonderful academic leadership, a Miami-Dade superintendent. So,
dear,
you know,
Lord,
you,
help us.
When you have situations where cheating is going on, and by the way, that there was also cheating in the professional development program. Teachers were told there are certain standards you have to do in Miami-Dade. there are certain standards you have to adhere to for teacher professional development. Well, there was a course on Common Core. This is funny. This is the funny part. It was a course to get teachers up to speed on Common Core. Well, guess what? That course at the last minute was replaced with another course. And people, teachers, who signed up for the course, some of them never attended the course, including the person who was overseeing the course, who was supposed to be in the course and got a passing grade to be in the course, but she wasn't in the course.
But she got a passing grade.
But she got a passing grade.
That's amazing.
Yes, she's the one that was over the course. She was the one that set up the course. She was the one that's responsible for the course. It was taught by another person who said she was there, but she wasn't because she was somewhere else teaching another course, and she got credit for the course. Now, does that make any sense to you?
Well, I was thinking she was bilocating, but yet she wasn't seen it either way. So.
I know.
No,
I know.
No,
she's, you know, it's one of those, you know, mind meld things. It was a mind meld thing, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, again, it's one of those situations where we shouldn't be tolerating. That's where we should have zero tolerance. There should be zero tolerance for cheating in school. There should be zero tolerance for not doing, you know, professional development of our teachers according to the book. If you don't like the rules, change the rules. But if there are rules and you have to live by the rules, then live by the rules. And you're going to have to learn how to do that if you're going to succeed. But if you can bypass the rules and you can cheat and not be punished for it, then that sends a chill throughout the entire system. And, of course, no one else is going to stand up knowing what happened to this librarian.
That's
a
right.
Librarian, award-winning librarian. Nobody's going to stand up, and next time they see cheating, they're just going to look the other way. And that's the sad part.
That's truly throughout the whole system now because, I mean, the rule of law, what is the rule of law these days? It means nothing. And, of course, in my own case with the notary public issue that I've been dealing with, I have proven that what the notary did was a fraudulent transaction, but the state doesn't want to do anything about that. Just because she created a false will or notarized a false fraudulent will, no big deal. I mean, it's just amazing that this is the mentality. That, you know, it's half the rule of law means nothing. Crime does pay, and if anybody doesn't believe that, they're not paying attention. It's just crazy. And, Neil, I can't believe you've been quiet all this time.
I agree.
This.
Yeah. No, this goes beyond. And again, my job is to report on this. Nobody else reports on these things, and that's the key. I recently spoke to the Faith and Freedom group here in Sarasota, and a wonderful group, and I was talking about reporting from using a moral perspective, and I always start off and I say, does anyone, raise your hand if you think the media is biased. And everybody's hand goes up, okay? And my point is that the media is not biased. I say you're all wrong. The media is actually suppressing the news. And the government is suppressing the media. And we're seeing that at the highest levels and at the lowest levels. We see the media failing to ask the simple question with this referendum, this school tax rest, where's the money? Where did the money go? They don't ask. They don't want to know. Because if they knew and they published it, then the referendum wouldn't pass. So there's a collusion, if you will. And who is on the short end of the stick is those uninformed voters who go there thinking they're doing good for the children when, in fact, the outcome is going to be totally different than good. And that's the problem we see, not just in our schools. We see it in our in every system that the government gains control of. We see a false. It's like a good friend of mine, Oleg Bashan, writes about. He said, you know, in the former Soviet Union, they pretended to pay us and we pretended to work. And sadly, that's what's happened in our schools. It's happening increasingly in our medical profession. Because really, I had a doctor. I went to the VA, and I have a doctorate at the VA, at the Veterans Administration Clinic here in Sarasota. And I said, doctor, how do you like working for the VA? And he said, well, it's sort of like working for the post office. I deliver medicine. I don't practice it. And I thought to myself, oh, my God, that's where Obamacare is headed, the entire medical profession is headed, that this Common Core, that's where it's headed. Teachers are just going to deliver education. Okay, they're not going to practice education. Doctors are not going to deliver medicine. They're going to practice medicine. And that's the sad point, is whenever you have government control beyond its normal responsibility to protect the individual from harm, then, and you see it begin to social engineer. I just had my taxes done. And my tax man is a former IRS agent, and he said, you know, when I started off, all the IRS did was make sure that that taxes were collected. And if you didn't pay your taxes, we went after you. He said, during my time in the IRS, I saw it turn into a tool of social engineering, and that we were rewarding certain people and punishing other people based on whatever the policy of the administration in power was. And that's why he got out of it. That's why he retired and said, I don't want any more of this. And now he helps defend me to get all the money I can out of whatever I paid into the coffers of the great Washington, D.C. So, no, I want to thank you both for having me on. I know it's been a long night. I've been on for, oh, my God, an hour and 37 minutes. Is there any other topic you want to talk about real quick before you run out of time or what?
Actually, before you go, Neil has been getting into the a common law grand jury, and I know you're into that. I really would like to have just a half, whatever's left of the time. We've got about 20 minutes left to get into the discussion about the common law grand jury, because people really need to understand that. Neil, what were you thinking on that, too? Did you want to kind of get into that discussion? Because I know the doctor has a lot of information on that, too. We need to promote that as much as we can.
Right. Golly, what to say. Should be knowing that all 67 counties, of course, in Florida have signed, and four other states have constituted the common law grand jury also, and they are working on all the other states. This is one of the largest tools that we have run across as far as power to bring America back, to correct the corruption, to actually stop Common Core, to stop this Agenda 21.
Exactly.
And we have got to get people on board. I was out most of the morning this morning, and I'm going after people on three basic steps. Number one, that they are Christians. Number two, that they basically have common sense and knowing right from wrong. And number three, that they definitely believe in that Constitution and are willing to take the vast amount of time that's going to be needed in educating themselves on that. And to hold our elected officials responsible to start turning things around. and people need to start looking this up. They need to go to the National Liberty Alliance website, register, log in, and sign up as a jurist. Also, at the top, you can click contacts, go to your state and your county, and get informed with who your organizer is, and call them and get with them and start getting involved. We can stop a lot of this corruption, and I'm sorry to say, by changing and doing elections, it's not going to work. We've been shown this now for how many decades. It is not going to change anything. We need to get behind a good... Pardon?
Yeah. And I was saying, the elections are too corrupt. We can't. We don't have the representation of our choice. Anybody that thinks we have the representation of our choice, I've got a swamp up in the North Pole to sell you or something. I don't know, but whatever. I mean, because it's absolutely crazy. We don't have representation of our choice.
No, and we've just got too much corruption in politics anymore.
Yeah.
I've gotten to the point where I don't trust a one of them. There's not a one of them. When 2014 ballot comes up, I'm probably only going to fill in three or four places, and that's it.
Yeah.
Because there's not anybody on there. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And as far as our school systems, all of this coming from Washington to the state level, but, and this is going to sound harsh, and I'm sure a lot of people aren't going to appreciate it, but I hold our teachers responsible for a lot of this. They are the majority on this, and I have spoken with many and heard from many that they know this is wrong. But there again, there's the corruption. Mm-hmm. They are willing to sacrifice our children, the future of America, by accepting all of this, accepting a paycheck. They are selling out America, and I am firm on that.
And, Rich, with the common law grand jury thing, you're involved in that too, so what exactly have you been doing with it? And, again, to kind of reemphasize what Neil was just saying, we got to use these kind of things to go after Common Core, go after this regionalism craziness they're doing, which, by the way, speaking of education, today they're talking about passing I think the House actually did pass the bill for in-state tuition for the illegal student kind of thing, or whatever that mess was about. But so what are you doing as far as the common law jury, too? How can we get everybody involved, too, on your side? What are you thinking about it?
Well, I think where I'm standing is I've been approached. There's two groups that have actually approached me. One group is the common law grand jury group, and I've been trying to recruit someone from the Florida chapter to write articles about it from a more, because there are certainly people much more knowledgeable about the process and what it means. And the other group is trying to decouple the Florida Supreme Court from the Florida Bar Association. Right now, they are inextricably linked, and the problem is when you have a situation like that, you have corruption in not only officers of the court but in the judgeship.
Right.
And my interest comes from two cases here in the 12th Circuit that I have personally covered, and that's why I'm passionate about this idea of a common law grand jury, and then this other group who is trying to hold accountable the officers of the court and judges and decouple the Florida Supreme Court from the Florida Bar Association. Let me just real quickly give you one in a 30-second elevator speech. A man in his 80s who is a snowbird living here in Florida, has a residence here and one up north, became ill. And his girlfriend contacted the son-in-law. The son was contacted by the county and said, well, we need, in order to take care of him, We need to put him in guardianship. The son decided, well, I'm up here in Washington, and I can't be down there. So without notifying the daughter, he goes ahead and gives his verbal approval to put his father in guardianship. The daughter hears about it, and she's traveling down to keep him from guardianship while the son has made the decision to go ahead and give the state the ability to do that. Now, guardianship is supposed to be for a very short term, period. The daughter comes down here, tries to get possession of the father. The state will not give him up.
Whoa.
They took not only possession of him, they took possession of his estate.
Oh, no.
Yes.
No.
And by the time the daughter got her father back, he was literally on his deathbed with blood poisoning.
Oh, no.
She never got the estate back. The father recovered but died shortly thereafter. He recovered from the blood poisoning, but because of the trauma he had been through,
right,
he died, and then she has yet to get possession of, and they basically sucked up every penny of his estate.
Oh, my God. Gosh.
Yes, his name is Al Katz. Al Katz. Here's the kicker. He's a Holocaust survivor.
Oh, no, and this happens to him.
Nazi Germany didn't kill mm-hmm. him, but the state of Florida did.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God.
There's another case. That's almost an identical case. Actually, two, but the one that's going on right now, I'm covering a woman in her 80s named Maria. Same situation, wonderful woman, sitting there in her home, having a good time, relaxing, enjoying herself. A doctor shows up at her door, starts questioning her. Ends up she's in guardianship.
What?
Yes.
Under his
ends up, she's in guardianship. Yep. There was
but
another
under his
man.
Wife, he even show up at her place.
Yeah. There was another man. By the way, there was another man, older gentleman, who put up his house for sale. And this is really crazy. He put his house up for sale. The realtor, brought him a contract. And the gentleman, who was in his 80s, decided he was going to accept a lower bid than what the asking price was. The realtor reported him as being mentally incompetent, and they placed him in guardianship based on a realtor.
Elderly.
Because he wanted to take a lower price for the house than what the realtor thought was reasonable. Now, it took this man 6 months before he was finally released from guardianship.
Can he sue her?
Huh?
Can he sue her for this, for that? Can he sue the realtor for doing that?
Well, I think he's also a Holocaust survivor. All three of these people that I'm talking about are Holocaust survivors.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. There was a big party for the guy. I mean, he was just so excited to be out. He's just so excited. But there was actually the gentleman who put this man in, who was part of one of the lawyers that helped put him in guardianship, was actually recently at a board of realtors meeting in Sarasota promoting that if they see this something happening with one of their clients, they should report it to him so they can put this older person. And I mean, Florida is getting a reputation of being a death camp for elderly.
Absolutely. A predator towards elderly as well.
A predator state. It's a predator state. And I'm telling you, it's a collusion. The judges, the lawyers involved in the guardianship system, the guardians themselves, who are the ones that are supposed to be taking care of and and properly making sure that the individual under guardianship, you would think that the state, if someone like with Al Katz's daughter, if someone comes there and says, I am Al Katz's daughter, I want my father back, you would think the state would be happy to give the responsibility back to the family. Well,
absolutely.
You would be wrong. You would be absolutely wrong. And if you want to read about it, yeah, if you want to read about it, go to drritzfire.com and just go up in the search and type Marie, and you will find the case of Free Marie Winkleman. Marie Winkleman is her,
Free Marie Winkleman, pray.
Yeah,
justice,
so you just type in Marie, and you'll get a series of articles. The top articles are the Marie Winkleman story. And on the second one, it says Winkleman Gardenshire, a test case to lower the bar
on incapacity
in Florida. All right,
yeah.
the picture there, the older gentleman in the middle that's sitting down between the two blonde ladies.
Right.
If you're on my website,
I'm on
that's
it.
The man. That's the man who was put in guardianship on the recommendation of a realtor.
Whoa!
Mm.
Whoa!
His name is Willie Burkow. Willie Burkow is at his guardianship freedom celebration, and he was released just this past January.
Oh my gosh!
This is when I really want to see this common law grand jury in action.
You need a common law grand jury to hold judges accountable, to hold lawyers accountable, to hold school board members accountable, to hold elected officials accountable, to hold guardians accountable.
Absolutely.
You have to hold these people accountable. You cannot allow a person's liberty and property to be taken wantonly. That's the key, and especially the elderly. The elderly, and Marie is sharp as a tack. Willie is sharp as a tack. Al Katz was sharp as a tack. And yet they put him in guard, and they sucked the life blood out of you. It's worse. And by the way, this is the 70th year, this year and next, or the 70th year of the liberation of the people from the death camps in Nazi Germany, and we're seeing the same system happening right here in the state of Florida.
Yeah,
the
we need
same
to picture the
process.
State of Florida with a big crime scene tape across it for the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, what a boy, you want to
and
spread
what's
that
interesting,
all
what's
over the
interesting
nation.
Is Marie gave her stepson-in-law. It's not even her daughter. She remarried after her first husband passed away. And she remarried the daughters of her second husband. One of the husbands, she gave him full power of attorney over her estate, which is estimated in over $3 million. She doesn't take anything out of the estate because she lives a very frugal, very quiet, very wonderful life based on other assets that are bringing in money to her. She specifically put in the full power of attorney, she gave him this power to keep her out of guardianship. He is using her money to put her in guardianship.
Oh, my.
If you read Marie Winkleman's case, you will go, what in the world is going on? Who? And a judge is sitting there and allowing this to happen. They are going into mediation to determine whether or not Marie is capable of living her life. You don't mediate that. That's a taking. That's a Fourth Amendment. That's a taking of her liberty. You don't allow that to go to a mediation. That's handled in a court of law. And her lawyer, who they thought was going to fight for Marie, is part of the problem. It's crazy. That's why we need common. Look, I understand all this stuff with Common Core. I'm talking about real people's liberty and property elderly people who
right.
have done, who lived good lives, who have been through hell, literally hell, in Nazi death camps, being treated like this in the state of Florida, in the 12th Circuit Court here in Sarasota, Manatee County. And we're not talking about some far-off, distant issue. We're talking about real people here, men and women, who are literally being treated not unlike what was happening in
Nazi Germany
7 years ago. Nazi Germany 7 years ago. And you wouldn't believe it. You would not, if you read those articles, just one of them, you would not believe. And I listened to the judge. The judge is there. He's allowing it to happen. The attorney, his name, his picture is right there, Rebecca Proctor. You know, they what they do is just amazing. And even her lawyer, even Marie's lawyer, is part of the problem. And the doctor who did the evaluation without even telling Marie that she was being psychologically evaluated for competency, he's being paid by the stepson-in-law.
Okay, let me come in here just for a moment when you're talking on lawyers, Dr. Schwer. That's just like in all 60 counties that the common law grand jury has been created in Florida now.
Yeah.
When we go to our board of commissioner meetings, our city meetings, and these attorneys are sitting there abiding everything these commissioners that are doing that is unlawful, corrupt, and they are going right along with it.
Yep.
And people need to realize that when you hold your commissioners responsible, and the day is going to be coming before long, or your city council people, you had better include those attorneys that are sitting there.
That's right.
Those attorneys that have their signatures on all these documents, and
right.
your county administrator, and your city manager.
Yes.
No, absolutely agree. I'm looking for, by the way, I want to put a plug in, you know, every one of my writers with there are some organizations that write for me that I'm able to use some of their research, but by and large, all my writers are what I call citizen journalists, and I'm going to put out a plug out there. If there's someone out there that wants to write and publish articles on my e-magazine about common law grand juries, I welcome that. I've talked to several people. As a matter of fact, I met a gentleman at the Faith and Freedom Group, and he said he was going to do that. So I'm looking for people to write about this. It's very much needed in this nation. It's needed in this state. It's needed in this county. You know, we got to do it. And all we need is one of them to get constituted in one of the judicial centers, and we're on our way. And I think it's
so
much
you guys
needed.
Know, we're down to 2 minutes.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sorry. Wow. I didn't mean to.
No.
But
this
I want to thank.
Great.
First
this
of all, I want to thank.
Good.
I want to thank you all for having me. I want to blessings to the both of you, and thanks so much for spending the time with me this evening.
No, thank you so much for being
such
a great guest.
And anytime you want me back, I'll be more than happy to.
Oh, we'll definitely have you back. You're a wealth of information, and we've only just hit the tip of the iceberg, people.
Yes, ma'am. All right, blessings to y'all.
Thank you
Good
so
night.
Much. Thank
you.
You
too.
Good
thank
night.
You.
Night.
Sally, do you want to talk about the common law grand jury before the last couple seconds?
Well, it's whatever Neil wants to say on it, because we got about a minute and a half right now.
I would just really quickly encourage everybody in every county in the state of Florida to go to the National Liberty Alliance website.
.org.
Yes, and click on the contact, pull up your county, get in contact with your county organizer, and start learning about it and getting involved.
And don't let it scare you. Don't let it intimidate you.
Oh,
don't
no.
let it overwhelm you. Realize that everybody's in this together, and it's going to be the common people, and I don't mean common like common. I'm talking uncommon common people, people with common sense to be involved in this.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if we mentioned really quickly that this has been recognized from the Supreme Court that this is the fourth branch of government.
Right. And it's always been there, but through our neglect and, you know, us being slowly dumbed down over the generations, we've missed a lot of knowledge, of wonderful things that are out there for us. And now we're beginning to see just how we, and I think when Judge Scalia did this, I think he sent up a flare to the nation. And this was his thing for us to hang our hats on to and say, hey, people, if you want help, it's going to be up to you. But this is the instrument. This is the way that you're going to go ahead and reestablish sanity and get rid of the lawlessness that's out there. When we have people enforcing laws that don't care if they're moral laws or not, then we are in trouble, folks.
And with that being said, we are off the air.
Thank you so much, Sally. So we're really off the air, so we're going to say what we want to say.
You want to go for 3 hours next week? Okay, off the air? Because I have a question.
Okay, well, we're off the air, but I'm not sure it's not recording, so.
Okay, well.
I'll call back.
I thought it was good. Talk to you guys later.
Okay, thanks.
God
Bye.
Bless. Bye-bye.
God bless. Good night.